Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I'm sensing a slight grump in the room from this English contingent over here. And Jay, what sort of mood are you in?
Not great. Not great.
Okay. It's a nice positive way to start. Hands in and a limp, half-hearted pod on three. One, two, three.
Pod.
Right then, this is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, and we have just had round three of the Six Nations. We've had a round of Premiership, Pro 12 and Super Rugby action as well to talk about. I'm Tim, JB is there.
Good day, Tim.
And there's Phil.
Hi, Tim.
We are available, of course, on iTunes, and as of right now, this is the very first podcast where we're very, very happy to be available on Acast, which is a wonderful little app that you should get on your smartphone and then go and enjoy Egg Chasers. And other podcasts from Acast as well.
Mostly Egg Chasers, probably over and over again as well.
Yeah, repeatedly and insist that all your friends download it as well. No, just briefly, what's very cool about the Acast app is that you will get more than just what you hear. There'll be things you can see. And when we talk about people, you might see a picture of, well, JB talking about Sam Burgess's quads or something like that. You'll get a picture of Sam Burgess's quads.
I don't know
quads.
Where this comes from. Where does this come from?
Do I need to get the Brokeback Mountain music out, Jay?
What you'll see is Andy Goode, and then you'll see a bit more Andy Goode.
Gavin Henson,
some Jamie Cudmore, over and over again.
Yeah, Jamie Cudmore. Now you're talking my language, Jay.
We are available on iTunes. Thank you for the reviews and all the rest of it you've left. Thank you very much for getting in touch with us on Twitter as well. At Rugby Podcast is where you can find us there.
Jamie Cudmore.
What of Jamie Cudmore?
Jamie Cudmore was in the news this week, wasn't he? Making noises about performance enhancers.
He released quite an aggressive tweet challenging anyone who's ever suggested that any rugby players take performance enhancing drugs.
Ah, so where have I heard this then? Has that made the news somehow?
I don't know. I did tweet an image of it to you. Oh, sorry, I sent an image.
Ah,
message.
That's probably why.
Good research there, Jay. Well done.
Well, I knew it was
making
important.
Sure you're in possession of all the facts before you make a statement on the podcast.
I'm in possession of Phil. They all are all the facts.
At Rugby Podcast is where you can find us on Twitter. And lots of people got in touch regarding one of the things we were talking about last week, which was the cliches of players. So when you hear a commentary, quite often the one fact surrounding a player that all the journalists and commentators cannot help but bring up. And we did miss some. Mark Smith from Welling Garden City tweeted us to say Brian the Pitbull Moore is a qualified manicurist.
Yeah. Really?
A couple of people tweeted that. I didn't realise.
Fact.
Yeah. He opened up but it might have been with his wife. He opened up and trained and learnt how to become a manicurist.
What is that?
It's the people that look after your nails and your cuticles and all the rest of it. Brian Moore can do that. That's pretty amazing, that.
It's not amazing, but yes, it's in... okay.
You wouldn't really put him and that together, would you?
Well, you wouldn't put him and law together, to be fair. I'm up on murder charges. Call Brian. No.
Student of the game on Twitter said David Strettle played for Manchester United in his youth. Fact. Victor Matfield was a fast bowler in cricket in his youth.
Fact. I can see that.
Yeah, you can, can't you? Pretty frightening fast bowler, that.
Coming down from a height as well.
And Yanni Duplessis found out about the fact he was called up to the 2007 South Africa World Cup squad just after he delivered a baby on an overnight shift.
Wow.
I hope the parents called it Yanni.
They should have done. Oh, and of course, Sean O'Brien was a farmer.
Was he?
Is a farmer.
Is or was Julian White?
Yes.
Yes. Mm.
I know the Youngs brothers, definitely. They're farming stock, aren't they? Norfolk farming stock.
Norfolk? I thought they were Leicester.
I think their dad plays, but I'm sure they're from...
Leicestershire.
They grew up in Norfolk. Anyway.
And another fact that's emerged over the last week, Sean Edwards, the Wales coach, is bitter.
Yes, he is.
Sour grapes coming out and saying, oh, I don't like the choke tackle. Get rid of the choke tackle. It's ruining rugby, just because England used it quite well to beat Wales.
Yeah, they used it magnificently well. And this was probably the single most annoying story, other than Finn Russell, that I encountered all week. When you make all these rules, what eventually happens...
Laws.
All the people do is try and break them. And even worse, they try and manipulate them. And I can't remember his name. This is what happens when you try and podcast hungover. And Sean Edwards has come out and said that he believes the choke tackle to be unsafe, and then goes to back up his point by saying, oh, well, you got to be careful with concussions. The choke tackle is probably the singular most safe technique that there is to stop a player.
Yeah.
Easily.
Because it slows everything down.
Yeah.
It is the safest way to bring a man to ground.
If I was going to design a safe way to tackle a rib player, it'd probably be chest to chest. And that's kind of what you do with choke tackle, because you've got to slow down, you've got to hold them up. Yeah. There is very little risk whatsoever.
Just sour grapes, wasn't it?
But this is what's plaguing the game. Cockrell does it all the time by saying, well, maybe I'll let the lads dive. I really, really hate it.
It really does come across as sour grapes, doesn't it? Because it's not worked in his favour. He wants it banned.
What did he say? Yeah, he said it doesn't add anything to the game. Well, I'm not entirely sure that Dan Liddiot diving at knees brings anything to the game, but it is part of the game. It's all part of the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you can't deal with it, that's your problem as a coach.
Now, they'll be slightly happier, the Welsh coaches, after a victory in Paris.
Yeah.
Which we'll get to in just a minute. But because it's raw and fresh in our minds, I want to talk about the Ireland-England game. We've just come straight from JB's house where the three of us watched it. And as Englishmen, Phil and I just feel frustrated by that.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. Frustration is the right word. Because England, they've got an inexperienced backline, but they just did not play smart rugby. Ireland had a very, very simple game plan, which is use the forge around the corner and kick the ball. Do not play any expansive rugby anywhere apart from England's 22.
Mm.
And England seems to have a similar game plan, which is do not play expansive rugby anywhere apart from England's 22.
England's own 22, I don't get it. I mean, if you want to use that choke tackle analogy, Ireland did an 80-minute choke tackle on England. That's actually what they did. They just went, you're going to have to get through this impenetrable green wall.
Yeah.
Go on, off you go. Give it your best shot.
It was quite a miserable game. And I also thought it brought out the shortcomings in Lancaster. Because tactically, England weren't too good.
Yeah.
Selection-wise, he had one call to make, and that was fullback. And he messed it up.
What would you have done?
Everyone knows exactly what I would have done. I'd have moved Watson to fullback and probably brought in a different winger. Maybe kept Johnny May. I mean, obviously, I'd have brought in Miles Benjamin or Christian Wade.
I kind of hear that, Jay. With having watched the way that England played the match, which was kind of, let's chuck it, we're in our own 22, let's have a go and try and go around the outside. I'd go, yes, your selection would make more sense. I actually think the right selection was made, because I was expecting England to play a bit more safe as houses at the back territory and try and squeeze out a win by using their front five.
But isn't the best form of defence attack? I would like to see him just really go for it.
I don't think all-out attack. Like, England tried it twice in their own 22 in the first half and got turned over and gave away two penalties, gave away 6 points. All-out attack wasn't the right thing to do. We said it last week. England need to play a pragmatic game because they've We believed they had the better tight five, but obviously Ireland were completely dominant at the breakdown, disrupted England's scrums, disrupted England's line-out. They were all round the better team, but what? Playing that simple game.
And what I don't understand is between Wales, when it was territory first, and then just go for it with hard running angles in the Welsh third, in that second half, you go from that to... like, I'm trying to work out what was being talked about in the England camp in training this week, because they must have... because it wasn't that the players were so stupid they got excited and just thought, I'm going to run it. It happened so many times, running it from their own 22. It was clearly a coached tactic.
I can tell that you two feel the same way as I did when Wales lost to England, which was, there's a coaching error here. They've been told to do something, and it is completely the wrong thing.
Yeah, I almost think that England were kind of sucked into playing that way by the fact that Ireland... they defend with their back three really deep. And so you've only got a wall of 12 guys in the defensive line when England are in our own territory. So it's like a challenge to get round them.
Do you know what?
And England stepped up and tried to take on that challenge, but weren't good enough to do it.
I reckon if you did that to Australia or New Zealand, they would have the skills to be able to run around the outside.
I think their
handling skills would be good enough that they would get Surveyor on the outside. Because England were trying to get around the outside because there was space, but didn't have the skills to do it.
We don't know because New Zealand didn't visit Ireland over the autumns. But, of course, a lot of other teams did, and Ireland was still very successful.
Yeah.
So it does look like this Ireland team does look like the real deal.
Phil called it. Their Irish defence is awesome.
Yeah. It is quite impressive.
And again, that's three games in Six Nations against three good teams and one try conceded.
I think the Welsh might test it, though. I think they've got the personnel to really give it a good going over.
But Jamie Roberts against Robbie Henshaw's defence was superb. He was deserved man of the match, in my opinion. Although he didn't do much with ball in hand going forward, apart from very hard carrying and scoring that try, dotting that try down. But his defence and all that was excellent.
Can we all agree that we don't think Goode is going to make another England appearance for some time?
It'll be interesting to see, because we've now got another week's break, so you'd expect Mike Brown to pass the concussion protocol in that time. Yeah. And
I don't think he'll make the... I think the final nail in the coffin for his World Cup hopes.
He received probably, I don't know, 15 to 20 kicks in that game, and most of them he did well with. They were all difficult kicks. And what you've got to remember is, Goode's not the tallest fullback. That Ireland team is perfectly designed for that game plan, because you've got that tall, athletic back three, and then they've effectively got two fullbacks in the centres. So every single one of those players going onto the ball is adept at taking the high ball.
I think the England backs looked naive.
Yeah,
they looked like a team that didn't have many caps between them. They didn't play a smart game at all. And in my opinion, the worst of those, he went from being golden boy to looking out of his depth on the strength of what I saw today. George Ford had an absolute horror show.
Yeah, Ford really didn't play well, to the point where he almost threw an interception, two-man mispass on his own 22 with 10 minutes to go, which was just, it would never on. It shows how much pressure he was under.
I really hope that this doesn't make Lancaster go into a shell and then revert back to the Barretts and the Farrells, because it would be a massive backward step. To go as far forward as I feel that they have and then revert back to type would be awful, just before the World Cup as well.
But it might have been the better option in that game. I still stand by it. The safer pick for today, and Alex Goode, and the safer game plan would have been more effective. A positive for England was the impact of the subs and how strongly they finished, which again is a negative for Ireland, because you saw a couple of years ago against New Zealand where they were well on top and they ran out of steam. And at one point, when England got some phase together, strung a few passes together, Nick Easter got over the line, but it was accidental offside. If that had gone the right way for England, they could have clawed their way back into it because of the subs' impact and the fitness that I think Ireland don't have that same offering.
I think we should move on at this point, because there's plenty to talk about, and I'm going to bring out this music again. Can you guess why?
No.
For who?
No.
Another Six Nations game.
Oh, Sergio!
Sergio!
Yes.
What a man!
Oh, yeah. Wow. I enjoyed this game.
I really enjoyed the Italy-Scotland game, I do have to say. A famous victory. And, I mean, let's bear in mind, right, this is just the Six Nations. The real meat and two veg. I don't know why I used that analogy. Maybe I'm thinking of Sergio. The real test is the World Cup. And to see how much it means to an Italy team to win a game in Scotland, and probably the only win they'll get this year.
Yeah.
I love how much it means.
Yeah.
Now, I'll get the negative out of the way first. Before we go on and talk about the positive. But this game was sabotaged from the start.
Oh,
it was
God.
Ruined. I'm yeah. sorry, boys.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Keep it brief. Keep it brief.
Very brief.
No, you're only saying to keep this brief because I've told you to length for 80 minutes over the England game. But our listeners have not heard this.
Yeah, keep it brief.
Okay.
Right. Finn Russell. Yes. Was not allowed to play.
No.
He was banned, which is ludicrous. They have hurt the brand of rugby, of Six Nations.
Why?
Because Six Nations is about having the best players on the pitch at any one time. Now, if he's done something wrong, which I don't really think he has, certainly not worth too much ban, fine him as a match fee. But don't deprive people of watching the best players. Because now, if you were to watch that game, you think, oh, Scotland are useless. But Scotland made so much progress from a very small player pool.
So?
Just to scupper it all.
So?
How can you say so?
No.
How can you say so? It's really important. They need their best players
so
at all times.
So is what you're saying, let's just say, right, exactly the same offence, punishment, would have been dished out to a player in the Championship. To an unknown player in the Premiership, let's say, and then at international level. But you're saying because Finn Russell is Scotland's main playmaker, we should make an exception for him?
Nope. Going forward, they should be changed. And they won't be changed because the powers that be are moronic when it comes to this sort of stuff. What the situation should be is if there is a real serious breach of rules, gouging, biting, that kind of thing, punching, I can see that there is a ban. What Finn Russell did wasn't worthy of a ban. Maybe you find him as much fee. Finn Russell had his back turned as Dan Biggar jumped onto his back. It's not right.
So you would change the punishment for that offence?
Yeah, only the highest level offences get bans. Punching, gouging, drug abuse, that sort,
right.
that sort of thing.
I can hear that, but it sounds like it just sounds like you were saying, for this one case, just for this game,
I don't
care about it next week as long as Finn Russell can play this week.
And Phil rightly pointed out, if it is Sean Lamont that got done, I wouldn't be mentioning it because I wouldn't care. But the principle remains.
All right, fine.
I do think the ban was probably correct. I do think it was dangerous and all that. But moving past that, Scotland played with Peter Horn, who's normally a centre, at 10, and he didn't control the game well at all.
No.
They looked kind of clueless, and it was Scotland's comfortably their worst performance, and they've got some good, exciting backs. They had Tommy Seymour back, they've got Mark Bennett, they've got Stuart Hogg, who are all pacey, exciting, talented backs, but they were never brought into the game.
And I was really enjoying watching Scotland play because I like teams beating other teams, regardless of who the other team is, as long as the best team wins.
Yeah.
I just felt that they kind of undid all that. But who knew it? Italians love to scrimmage.
Oh, they do.
Scrimmaging was superb.
Well, what I like about them is they mix it up now. They're not quite as predictable as they were. They did do a lot through the forwards. And, Venditti, you got the try, came out and said, and Luke McLean as well, both came out and said, everything should be put on the forwards for that because they won that game for us. And no sign more than that than a rampaging Sergio Parisi. He deserves that music again. The guy, I mean, what are Italy going to do when he goes?
Oh, he's got another 5 years, easy.
Yeah, well, for the Italian team, he has. I don't know. I really don't.
Yeah.
It wasn't until I watched the replays of that scrimmaging that you realise how low and how straight the backs
are. Aguero, how does he get that low?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
But the seven, the Italian seven.
Favaro,
yeah, who's actually signed for Glasgow for next season.
Or, sorry, as Eddie Butler would say, Favaro.
he looks good as well, putting a couple of monster hits on Dunbar and one of the back rows.
Where do you rate the Italian 10?
As a 10?
As a great number 8, one of the best number 8s in the world rugby.
He could be a great 6. He could be
Sergio Parisi's replacement.
Yeah, he could be a talented 6.
Haimona, that's his name.
But, so he can't kick. He went into the game with, I'm sure they said he went into the game with a 20% kick success rate in the Six Nations, and he couldn't kick out of hand either.
Jesus.
Do you know what, he couldn't distribute because after 5 minutes he threw an interception pass.
So what are they picking him for?
He's a crash ball.
It's crash ball 10, but it's also quite handy having him so close to the driving mauls. He can go in and be the ninth man in the driving mall.
Another 110 kg in the driving mall.
Yeah, he's big, isn't he?
He's massive.
He's massive.
His skill set is nearly the same, and his physical size is nearly the same as Mauro Bergamasco. It's like the coaches wanted Mauro Bergamasco as their halfback, but looked back at the game tape from a few years ago and thought,
no,
it didn't work with Mauro Bergamasco, but we'll find someone exactly the same size and shape and skill set and just put him there and see if it works.
I mean, at lower levels, the lower leagues of rugby that we've all played in, or school rugby, you come up against a team all the time that have a big pack and a massive 10, and that's all. They're the only people that ever see the ball.
I played against the front row this weekend. Front row was over 60 stone.
Just wow, think of that. 20 stone a man.
About that, yeah.
Wow.
Kendall.
How did you get on? All right, I'll leave it there.
Yeah.
But this, Scotland will be, they'll be so upset, not just because they were winning and then two yellow cards, which were probably correct in the circumstances, left them two forwards light and left the Italians to get a penalty try, which again was correct. Not because of that, but because, so every 2 years they get their banker, their home game against Italy.
Yeah.
Each team gets to win one game every 2 years, guaranteed. And they've missed it. They've missed their banker. So it's another 2 years before they can win a game.
It's just such a shame. It feels like they've just undone all the good work. It really does. It feels like back to the dark age for Scotland.
Frustrating.
You know, we just mentioned a 10 for Italy who has got a really poor kicking ratio. How France would have wished they had someone who could kick a ball on Saturday evening.
Did they not swap kickers at one point?
They swapped them, then they swapped them back.
Yeah, 40% the kicking.
That was the game right there. Lee Halfpenny nailed everything, and France couldn't hit a barn door.
They left 9 points on the pitch.
Lopez missed two simple ones, and Parra missed the simple one.
So that's 9 points, and the winning margin was 7 points.
And Dan Lediot looked like Sam Burgess playing rugby league.
With that offload for the try.
Exactly.
I couldn't believe that was Dan Lediot.
I couldn't either. Rewind that now!
Who offloaded that? What? No way.
It wasn't a very exciting game, this, although the score would indicate it was. I felt a bit empty watching it at the
end. Do you not feel that when you look back at round three of the RBS Six Nations and you look at the Premiership, do you not feel like the whole weekend was a little bit...
Yeah, exactly. How I feel.
I was a bit disappointed in my... painkillers for my shoulder ran out on Friday because I could have done with some of them for some of those games.
What was the Friday? Oh my God, the Friday game was even more painful than the internationals.
Yeah.
It might have been the worst game in the Premiership all season.
Oh,
it was just horrendous.
Bath Exeter was pretty bad.
Really?
Yeah.
My favourite fixture of the year.
Yeah, so disappointing.
That's what I mean. There was a lot. I was so excited about England Ireland and it just petered out. I was so excited about Bath Exeter Bath. And that didn't live up to it at all. The only game that kind of did on paper, as far as I can tell, was Wasps Gloucester, and I haven't watched that.
Now,
yes, yeah, a lot of points scored in that, and obviously a lot of points scored in the London Irish, London Welsh.
Are Wasps in possession of that mighty athlete Piri Whippu yet?
He was in the match day squad.
Was he?
Oh my word! So you've got the.
So he probably came off the bench to make his debut.
So that is, without doubt, without question, the most dynamic halfback pairing of all
time.
Burger
King.
Oh my word. Right, well, let's talk about that in a little bit, right? Because we just touched on Wales and we should mention Wales a little bit more. Or I don't know, is there any more to say other than Lee Halfpenny beat Camille Lopez? Is that basically what happened in the Stade de France?
No, I don't think that's quite fair. Wales did play very well. Sam Warburton was dominant. Probably Sam Warburton's best game for about a year or so.
Yeah, Warburton was good. I thought Alan Wynne-Jones was the best man on the pitch.
Yeah.
Jamie Roberts did well at what he does. Wales were the better team, but they kind of lacked that spark. They lacked that line breaker, that game changer. Mm.
Gatlin has a saying, doesn't he, which is be the best at the jobs that require no skill.
I just remembered another one of the cliches with Warren Gatlin broke both his feet or ankles or was it?
That's not a cliche, that's a fact.
No, a fact. Anyway, sorry.
The commentators rarely mention that. Now here's Warren Gatlin with his pre-match interview. So Warren.
How are your ankles? No, how are your heels?
Heels? Broke both his heels.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did he do, jump off a building?
He was painting the outside of his house in New Zealand, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So he couldn't fly back to the...
He mustn't be in New Zealand that often, must he?
That's why he's got to paint it.
I guess so.
3 years.
Why doesn't he just hire someone? It's obviously very dangerous.
What did he do? Just go, I won't climb down the ladder. I'll jump off it onto my feet.
With my perfectly straightened legs.
He'd have survived if he just landed head first with that massive Swede. Sorry, Gatland has a saying.
Oh, yeah. Be the best at the jobs that require no skill. Or something along those lines. And I think that shows when Wales play, because it feels like every time they play, they're preparing to run a marathon or do something of extreme physical exertion. Does that make sense? Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah. It does.
They just run and run and run and run.
But on the other hand, sorry, just briefly talking about the French. Every time I watch the French team these days, I'm kind of, because of the potential and because of the history, I always expect they're just about to turn a corner and they're just about to put an incredible performance in. And then when I saw the refreshed team, I was like, yeah, this is really positive. Like Lamoureux, who's really good form at the moment, coming in. And it just gets worse and worse. Every single performance is worse than the last.
It feels like Sale Sharks when they're in the death throes of Saint-André's tenure there. And they had all these talented players, and yet the best they could do was this turgid, awful rugby thing.
There was about 10 minutes after half time where they played with a bit of pace.
Yeah.
And they had like ball carriers getting over the gain line, and suddenly they just, the backs were opening up a little bit. And you there are glimpses of what they can do, but as I think we said on a previous podcast, they're just waiting for a World Cup quarterfinal to spark into life.
I'm going to continue to say what I said last week about Basterill. Did you see that offload?
Oh, it's gorgeous.
My word.
Yeah.
He has got some coordination for a big guy.
And then that will nicely dovetail back into, as you said, now, for the rest of this season anyway, one of the largest halfback pairings that has ever been assembled together, Piri Wipu and Andy Goud in the same 15.
Wow.
That's something else. Well, I was going to go, who would complete that back line with him? Basterill would be one.
Yeah, Nadolo.
Nemanja Nadolo.
Yeah. George North.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably George North.
Rupeni Thalthal.
He's probably too lean. He's probably too lean.
He's a bit lean, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, let's go Rupeni Thalthal.
Is it the Chiefs? They've got a big fullback. Is it Woodward?
He's very rotund, isn't
he? Yeah, like 105 kg fullback.
He played ahead of Anscombe last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Scott Gibbs back in the day would have got.
No,
got
but he was like, he was quite broad. He wasn't chunky, if that makes sense.
Neither
are any of these guys. I bet if you take Bastro's top off, he'll still look.
No.
I'll take that back completely.
Bastro's weird. So most props who are basically the same size and shape as Bastro, 120 kilogram squares, they have like really defined legs.
Yeah.
Bastro's legs are just like sausages. They're like, it's like a slab of doner meat. It's just straight down. There's no definition,
but
no nothing.
Such a good player. I really
imagine
really
how good he could be.
Oh, God. Don't get me onto that again.
No, I know. Listen, right. Let me change tack slightly because Wales got a win in Paris and as it is today, happy St. David's Day.
Thank you, Tim.
What did you do on St. David's Day, Jay?
I watched England versus Ireland.
Is there any tradition?
Not that I know. I mean, I think the only tradition is to wear a daffodil and tell everyone in the office that you're Welsh, and that's basically where it ends.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I've got a little game for us to play.
Oh, yes, please.
Ooh. It's called. I took JB's game from last week and I've kind of adapted it.
Made it playable.
Made it a bit more playable. We're going to call it the age game. And what I'm going to do is, JB and Phil, you're taking each other on. I'm going to give you, I've got Welsh legend rugby players and you're going to have to guess their age. Oof. All right?
Fine.
JPR Williams. Legend that he is, Phil. You've got to have a guess. How old is JPR Williams?
Think. So I reckon he would have been 66.
Okay, JB.
Oh, God. 59?
JPR Williams, what'd you say?
59.
And you said?
66.
And he's 64.
Yes.
Well done. And that means, Phil, you said 66. You were two away. You got a score of two. JB, you said he was 59. You're five away. So you've got a score of five.
Great.
Two plays five. Brilliant. Next one, Scott Quinnell.
And Jay to go first.
Yep.
Scott Quinnell is 38.
When did he finish playing?
Never you mind.
I reckon he's a nice round 40.
Scott Quinnell, 42.
No!
So add another two onto your score, Phil. Make it Phil's on four. You were two away again. Jay was four away, so you're on nine. Four plays nine. Jonathan Davies, the commentator, Jonathan Davies, not the current international centre, Jonathan Davies.
Okay.
48. Oh, sorry.
That's first. Fine, you said it. Go.
48.
So, I remember watching Jonathan Davies.
Oh, God.
Play for...
Widnes?
No.
Great Britain.
Great Britain against Australia at Old Trafford.
Yeah.
And I think I was about 10 at the time.
I can remember seeing him in the Six Nations on telly.
Really?
That grubber kick try against Scotland.
You can't teach that. You cannot teach that.
What did you say? 48.
Yeah.
I'm going to say...
Say 73.
Nice and round again. I'll go 50.
Jonathan Davies is 52.
No!
Phil is two away again. Should we do one more?
Yeah. No!
One more. Yeah. So it's 6 plays 13.
God damn it.
Scott Gibbs. You remember him on that Living With Lions
43.
Video?
No. 44.
Wow. I'll go 43.
Scott Gibbs is 44.
Oh, geez.
Yes! Victory!
Moral victory.
If you get a perfect zero...
Nothing. Phil is the winner today. Well done.
Yes!
In our St. David's Day age game.
Well, new music.
JB lost again.
Good, I like that.
All right. Hey, the badge is back.
Yes.
The badge is back in Super Rugby.
Is he?
Not back playing yet.
Not back playing yet, but he's back. He's back with the sea of blue.
Sorry?
Bloody get it up, yeah?
Western Force.
Ah, there we go. Brilliant news.
Where have you been? Have you been under a rock this week? Have you missed that?
I had no idea. Well, that's good. When's he stopped playing again?
He had a clear out on his ankle a few weeks ago when he was back in Japan. And so he's still a few weeks away from playing.
Yeah, and we can expect more on a nice Saturday morning after he's bagged a meat pie for Western Force. We can expect more of this.
Oh, but I've gone up and over and bloody head over biscuit. No, I was busting for a bit of meat this game, but didn't seem to work out.
What's your philosophy on attack with this team?
Into them, basically. up the guts.
There you go.
Can't wait.
Did anyone see Julian Surveyor's try?
Yeah, I did.
Against the Western Force this weekend. I'm only mentioning it because it was a hell of a try from 60 yards out, and he ran over one of Badge's teammates, another winger, Luke Morahan. He just absolutely skittled him.
I watched a fair bit of Super Rugby this weekend.
Don't have Sky. I don't have Sky Sports.
Is that because you only watch BT Sport?
No.
Because they're superior broadcasters.
No, I do have BT Sport. I can't confirm or deny whether or not there are some dodgy live streams which I could log into. But I know I've missed Super Rugby this year. I'm missing it.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, there was a try scored by the Cheetahs, which involved 3 offloads within the Blues 5-metre line. It was quite spectacular. It wasn't spectacular. It was just exciting.
Yeah, I'd watched that game earlier, and we were watching the Northampton game. Northampton got themselves in a nice position, 5 metres out, and they just conspired to blow the try. And we were saying, if that was either Rugby League or Southern Hemisphere, they would have scored it.
Yeah.
And there was a great example in the Cheetahs game where a man picked the ball up 10 yards out, he was scragged and he offloaded, he was scragged and he offloaded, he was scragged and he was offloaded, and they just worked their way and finished the try.
And weirdly, it would have been the Cheetahs. I mean, one of the reasons I kind of went off Super Rugby a little bit is I thought the quality had been diluted when they had all these other South African teams. Now, I know the Cheetahs have been around for a long time, but they have been relatively rubbish, as of the Lions. But they look pretty solid.
I wonder if, and this is maybe a way of linking this story back in, I wonder if, when you look at the skill set in Super Rugby and in Southern Hemisphere sides, the kind of closed shop, no fear of relegation and ability to bring through young players and coach a style that's less pragmatic and more about, you know, the attacking rugby that we want to see. I wonder if what's been mooted that the RFU will look at the possibility of ring fencing the Premiership with 14 teams rather than 12. I wonder whether that would have that effect here. Or is it the weather? Is it the climate? I don't know. Apparently, with what's happened to London Welsh this season, the RFU are looking at the possibility of Worcester...
Bristol. Leeds.
And probably Leeds coming up. And then loosely ring-fencing.
I think it's a case of having profitable... I suppose they'll turn into franchises.
Yeah.
So they want to match... From what I understand, they want to match it up with the academies.
Yes.
Which isn't a terrible idea, I guess.
No.
I'm loosely in favour of it, actually.
I thought you would be with the NFL model.
I will tell you why. It hasn't worked particularly well for Super League. I love the NFL model. But then I don't like what Super League do, which is they occasionally relegate someone from somewhere.
Yeah, and they're changing it again this
year. Yeah, so it doesn't give much security to those teams below. So say if they've built up and they've reached a certain standard, is there a guarantee that they can go up? How does it all work? I think it needs to be a much more cast iron model than just loosely ring fenced. They've either got to do it completely or not at all.
But in the Super Rugby, as in the Southern Hemisphere Super Rugby, you have like the tiers below. They kind of feed into the regions. Yeah. So you have that top tier is a different standard, so, and each club pulls in.
Same as Munster, same as Wales.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But the English club system, I don't know. The Championship wouldn't work like that. Suddenly you would have semi-professional, currently semi-professional, some full-time professional Championship clubs who overnight would be kind of out of business.
That could be the best thing for them some ways.
I don't think they would go out of business. I think...
Do you think people would still go and see them if there wasn't a league structure that had
they're still competing for that Championship prize. Do you think people who go and watch Moseley, do you reckon they're going there because they've got harbouring hopes of getting to the Premiership?
No.
They've been in National One Championship as long as I've known. No, so but, the past 20 years.
No, but would they care where they finished in that league without the fact that whoever did finish top of that league was in the Premiership?
You'd still make it a prestigious award, and it's broadcast on Sky and all that. The playoffs are all broadcast on Sky. So you do keep that the prestige of it. It's just not necessarily a stepping stone.
You know, it might be the best thing for all those clubs if there isn't a professional route for the lower leagues, because just spending money on players who are not good enough to be pros.
The one thing I would say is ring fencing and having 14 teams could be the best thing for the national team. But on the flip side, what I would say about the Championship is you don't just write off the job that the Championship does in developing current international players. And you kind of said these are players listen, Billy Twelvetrees, Dan Cole,
Luther Burrell,
players,
Tom Youngs.
Chris Ashton, Tom Youngs.
I don't think that's going. So that's not my argument.
No. But what I'm saying is,
I think you clearly won it because that's my argument.
No. What I'm saying is, if the Championship suddenly becomes amateur,
those players would still have come through the same system.
No, I don't know.
And besides, weren't a lot of those boys in academies and farmed out?
No,
somewhere.
12 trees went to Bedford, I think.
He did.
Yeah, not as an academy player.
He was dropped from Leicester. He no contract. Started playing at Bedford and then was re-signed by Leicester.
And look at the lad who's captain of the Chiefs now. He was dropped from Saracens and went and is a late bloomer, now 26 and coming through.
Is he 25?
Yeah,
Matt Simons.
Money is not necessarily a good thing in the lower leagues.
No. I hear that. But all I was saying is let's not write off the important job that the Championship and the league structure as it is
plays in the
national setup.
And you're going to think I'm mad for saying this, but I tell you what I think might help is if you remove the role of developing youth players from the professional teams and let the youth players play in the lower leagues, almost like the college system of American football, which is all the kids play together, and if they're good enough, they go up the ranks. Because what it tends to do is it tends to keep all of your local lads local and then build support. And then when they're good enough, they can get snapped up rather than being hived away by academies and you never see them.
See, I like it the other way, like the Super Rugby style, where they're part of the like franchise setup, but then they go and play in the lower levels.
Yeah,
a lot of academies, like Tim was saying, the number of England players who have done that, they've been at Leicester or Harlequins or whoever, and they've gone out and played 20 games in a season against the big strong. Like Dan Cole would have learned so much more than
playing academy matches or 18 matches.
As a 20-year-old playing in that league with guys who are in their 30s who have played 200 National League appearances.
And let me just rattle off, just off the top of my head, Tim Strether didn't come through an academy. He came from Nottingham. Chris Wiles didn't come through an academy. Came from Nottingham. Richard Barrington at Saracens came from Jersey.
Jersey, yeah.
And there's countless examples like that.
Josh Beaumont. Yeah, Durham University and Fylde.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. Let them play lower down. I do think academies sometimes hive off the lads when they should be having them exposed to national.
Yeah, they sort of, much like kind of the football model, they chuck their net over everybody.
Yeah. I just realised, are we in favour of it or not?
Well, I like it.
I like it.
The only thing is, would you end up getting what the Pro 12 has previously had with non-event matches, where people rest up because they've got the Heineken Cup? But I don't think you would, because you've still got to qualify for the top four for the final.
Yeah.
And you've still got to qualify for the top six for Europe. So that keeps everyone honest.
Would you be interested in having a wooden spoon match? Maybe best of three. in the worst stadium that they could find.
Like a punishment.
Yeah, real. And you just got to avoid it. With the most cards to his name.
Have you heard the Super League system now?
No.
I'm not going to go into much detail, but basically, because it's 12 teams, I think the top 8 go into one playoff, and the bottom 4 during the top 4 from the league below, and they have some kind of playoff system.
It's Super League, why do you do it to yourself?
They make the most complicated end-of-season scenarios that you could possibly imagine.
Don't they just? Do you know what? It's such a wonderful game as well. It's got so much going for it, and the only thing that seems to hold it back are the people that run the game.
Like when they had the World Cup in Britain, and none of us really knew it was even going on. And we're big rugby fans.
We love rugby.
Yeah.
The first time that I heard about it was when there was a sign up on the motorway saying that traffic might be bad because there's a World Cup game. What World Cup game?
All right. Leaving that to one side for a minute. You've been very coy about this. You said you two have been preparing something for the podcast.
Ooh, yes.
So are we going to unleash that or what?
We are.
Me and Jay, because I'm off work at the moment, Jay came round one afternoon for...
Because I am working at the moment.
one evening for a nice pot of coffee.
Yeah, evening.
Nice pot of coffee, chewing the fat. And we came up with a 15 together, and we're going to read it out to you, Tim. I don't know if you might want to write down some names. And the idea is you've got to guess the 15.
Oh, right, so guess the topic.
The topic, yes. Yeah. Mm. Well, we've done it the normal way, but you have to reverse engineer our 15.
Okay.
Jay, do you want to read the forwards?
Okay. Gethin Jenkins, Kevin Mielamu, Jason Leonard, Victor Matfield, the magnificent Fabian Palouse.
What a jaw.
What a jaw. He threatened physical violence on his forwards if they were indisciplined.
Really?
When he was captain, yeah. Physical violence.
That's a good way to get around the problem.
Isn't it? I'm not sure if the RFU has something to say about that and negative reinforcement in level 2 coaching or something.
Go on.
George Smith, Richie McCaw, and the almost as equally fabulous Sergio Parise.
I think I know what the 15 is already. But,
okay.
But I'll listen to the rest and see if where I'm thinking it's going it is.
Number 9, George Gregan. Then outside him, Ronan O'Gara.
Yeah.
Philippe Sella. Brian O'Driscoll. Wings of Adam Ashley Cooper and Brian Habana, and fullback Chris Patterson.
Okay, I'm trying to work out exactly how you've done it, or what the exact question is, but it's...
There's a tiny twist to it. Not much of a twist, but it was a small twist.
Right.
Is there?
That's a really good team. It's something to do with most capped.
Yes.
But I don't know whether it's... They're not the most capped in their position in the world, are they?
They are. That is it.
Wow.
It is that simple.
And we try to include one from each of the leading nations.
Well, we were...
So, for example, Jason Leonard, you've put him as a tight head in this 15,
yeah.
Rather than primarily where he played, which was
Lucid. Well spotted.
Yes, but...
And you've put Philippe Sellar
as an inside centre. Yeah,
exactly.
Matfield and Palouse, that works as a 4-5 partnership, doesn't it?
Smith, Parise, McCourt would be an incredible back row.
I feel sorry for George Smith that he's around, that his time overlapped Richie McCourt, because he's a little older than Richie McCourt, I think.
So yeah, in George Smith's case,
not by much
Smith and Richie McCourt, the two highest capped flankers.
Yes, and Parise is the highest capped number 8.
Right, okay, cool. Because I was going to say blindside, exclusively blindside, who would be blindside?
Who
played primarily at City?
You had to go quite a way down because the next one was Martin Williams.
Really?
Yeah.
And he's 7.
He's 7
yeah,
as well.
Another 7.
Maybe 6 is such an abrasive position that...
You just can't...
You can't last...
Sustain.
You don't have the longevity of a scavenging 7.
Yeah.
Mind you, 7's pretty violent because you've got to kind of crouch, huddle over a ball with your neck exposed while people try and roll you out of the way.
Maybe that's why we've got 2 loose head props as well.
Indeed.
Maybe. I'm just trying to look at who is still playing. Most of the pack are still playing.
Are they?
Leonard and Palouse aren't, and the rest are.
Mielamu is George.
Yeah.
Is George Smith still playing?
He is. He's playing in France.
Is he?
Yeah.
So who is currently playing that could challenge this 15 and could make it into a most capped 15?
Let me get the list up.
In the making type names. Sort your phone out, JB.
I've got to turn it off.
Tell you what, because we now have the wonderful support of Acast, and we're available on the Acast app, and that means that if you listen to
the reason I went off, I was just downloading my latest Acast podcast.
If you listen to the Egg Chasers podcast through the Acast app, What that means is we can make sure there's pictures and web links and things. What we'll do is every time your phone goes off, that means I will afterwards put in a picture of you that I've got from your stag do.
Oh, nice!
On the podcast.
Oh, I can't wait.
Is it the one with the glass bathroom, glass-walled bathroom?
Yes, the glass-walled bathroom.
That's a nice picture.
That's a lovely, lovely shot. Just sort your phone out, Jay.
Done.
Yeah. Interestingly, so the most capped man of all time is Bod with 141. Richie McCaw's currently on 137, so you would expect him to overtake Bod this year.
Yeah.
Just trying to think who's coming up. Parise, right up there. Castro Giovanni. Jean de Villiers, 106.
Oh, so easy.
He's so unfair.
Yeah. I really, really hope he comes back.
Shows what a dangerous game it is.
It shows why there should be laws enforced to look after players' welfare.
If anything, all these high caps mean the laws have gone too far.
Adam Jones, 100 caps. No more.
I thought it was really interesting that Wales have got so little faith in their backup front row that they basically kept their props on the whole match.
Until the very last scrimmage.
There was some talk, some theories I heard about holding Hibbard out the team, A, because he's not played very well, which I don't subscribe to, actually. I don't think he has played well. But bringing him on in the second half, so when France go to their monster set, which they did, we can answer with a big lad like Hibbard. I thought that made quite a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah, I thought that did. I thought that did. I thought Hibbard, when he came on, he was like a wrecking ball, wasn't he?
Big Hibs.
Yeah.
It's a nice role for him, that.
Yeah, it is a good role. Just a couple of names who might get to the 100 caps. Mike Phillips is 3 away. Mar Nonu is 6 away.
Oh, he will.
Alan Wynne-Jones definitely will. He's on 93 at the moment.
Wow.
He looks like a man who should have had 170.
Yeah.
At least.
Sean Lamont is 7 away. He'll probably do it.
No, he won't.
He'll probably do it.
Wow.
And then he should have done it already. Matt Gitto has not received a cap for 4 years.
That's amazing.
He's on 92.
It's amazing when your national team is nowhere near as good as it should be and you've got maybe the best back in the world.
Yeah.
Not interested. Sorry, lads. Don't care.
Yeah. Mm. So yes, good. Well done, Tim.
Too easy for you, mate.
Yeah.
Next time we'll get you something slightly better.
Yeah.
Any more suggestions for a 15 or something we could look at, a topic that we could go into in future podcasts? At Rugby Podcast, tweet us with your suggestion. Just while I'm just digging something out, boys, did you see? Oh, you must have seen. Everyone saw the Brit Award thing. Moving away from rugby for a second.
No, mate, I did not watch Brit Awards.
Madonna, no, the Madonna thing.
Don't, nope.
Come on! Don't tell me you didn't.
I
see
I did not see it. What was it?
Oh, don't give me that.
What was it?
Yes, I saw it, Tim.
Yeah. I didn't. What is it?
And I saw half a dozen different vines with like gladiators kicking her in and
what?
What was her name? What's the wrestler?
I have no idea. I don't know what you're talking about.
She couldn't undo her cape and one of her backing dancers pulled her off the top of a stage, so she landed on her ass.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you not seen that, honestly?
I don't.
Have you how actually old been? She?
56.
Oh, my God. Like, a broken hip's quite serious for a 60-year-old.
Yeah. What I was going to say was she took
She's 56.
She took that incredibly well and didn't complain once. She didn't wave her arms in the air like some rugby players have been doing recently. And it was going to lead me on to just mention, it's been tweeted to us a little bit, and I've noticed it as well. And I noticed it in Friday night's game. The appealing that's going on from players. There was a little bit of it in the England Ireland match today, like just arms going up and sort of petulant hand gestures towards the assistant referees and the referee themselves. And I think we need to watch it.
A lot.
I think we need to watch
it. It's coming from coaches, Tim. It's coming from coaches.
No.
It is.
No.
It is.
Coaches could put a stop to it. I don't think the directive is coming from coaches.
There's a couple of things. Obviously, the game's getting more competitive because there's more money involved. So, you know, that can't be discounted as a reason. But the more laws that are brought in, and the more it's a case of let the referee officiate the game, there's no self-policing now. We were talking about the lack of wrecking. We need to bring back wrecking for various reasons. And because there's no self-policing, that you're putting more pressure on refs, and as such, players are also putting more players on refs to make decisions in which they see are right.
I don't think self-policing needs to be in a physical way. It can be self-policing, as in the coach or the captain saying, I do not want to see that. The only person that talks to the referee is the captain.
But whilst there's a culture of they must win, and they must win because that is their job, when they talk about the only thing that we can influence is what we can influence, one of those things would be the ref. It's just the way that the game has progressed.
Do about it in the right way.
And if you can self-police it, I completely agree. But where you can't self-police it, when it happens, I demand, whether it's the RFU, whether it's the European Rugby Commission, what is it, Commission? Whatever it is, ERC, whatever it is. Whoever it
NATO.
Is, whoever it is, I demand that you come down on a ton of bricks on anyone who steps remotely out of line, because it's why I love rugby. And I was reminded of it. I was watching my son play mini rugby this morning, and end of a game, the coaches all make them 3 cheers, shake hands with every player, and I love rugby for that. I love it.
Yeah, there is that. I just think it's been taken away by all laws. I really do.
No, I think you're putting blame in the
wrong place.
It's
nothing to do with laws. That's
wrong
not that's,
place, it is.
It's to do with personal pride. It's to do with your own individual attitude. It's not laws, Joe.
Let me put it this way.
There's always been laws.
Let me give you an example of rucking. Now, there's so many infringements now in the ruck, and the only real worry a player has of being on the wrong side is that the call might go against him. But if he's skillful enough, like, say, a Richie McCaw, he might just win back the ball. Back in the day, he'd just be stood all over, and there's never really been many injuries from someone standing on thighs and backs. But now that's been taken out, instead of players wrecking all over Richie McCaw, they've got their hands in the air saying, sir, 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 wrong side, wrong side. And their response to it, the authorities, is actually not less rules, but more rules, and more people to enforce the rules by bringing in not only refs, but now assistant refs. It is a problem. They're making the game more complex, and that's why we're getting this.
Well, anyway, we've been tweeted by lots of people mentioning, did you see players appealing to the referee for decisions and this and that? And yes, we have spotted it as well, and our eagle eyes are on it. And if you see it, let's keep exposing it when it happens.
Yeah,
and try and shame the players into not doing it again.
Yeah, a nice picture of someone like looking at the ref with his arms out wide,
arms in the air. And if you can, tweet it with a picture with the equivalent football action. So they are really shamed, because no one wants that like a footballer.
Can I do something? I very rarely do this. We always keep it very much on topic with rugby. But there's one story that I thought you'd just love. I just want to bring up. It's nothing to do with rugby whatsoever.
Looking forward to this.
But did you see the story about Vladimir Putin being advised by aliens?
No.
No.
Apparently, Vladimir, according to this British politician.
Who's the politician?
Simon Parkes is his name.
Who's that?
He's a councillor in Whitby, North Yorkshire.
Ah.
He said he's blamed the hostilities in Ukraine, which is pretty bad. You see what's going on there. It's awful. I don't want to make light of the actual what's going on. He said that Vladimir Putin is being advised by space reptiles on the Ukraine crisis.
Let me be clear on the story here now. Are we saying that Putin's crazy for getting advice from aliens?
He's getting foreign policy.
Or Mr. Parks is crazy for making this up? Because I'm not sure where this story's going.
He claims Vladimir Putin is getting foreign policy advice from space reptile aliens. Even more than that, he's gone on record. Said that he is the son of one of these space reptiles. This is someone that's been voted in role.
Hang on, isn't this a David Icke type thing, like the Illuminati?
Check this out, this guy talking about his dad.
My real mother is about 9 foot tall. The reptile, which I refer to as Daddy, and he's got red, like glowing coal eyes. And this is the reptile that chucked us out of Eden. He says
brilliant.
To me, what would you like?
Brilliant.
Can I have a pretty young female like Prickles? She's a lion person, but she's a reptilian lion.
A reptilian? Because you know nothing.
Zuga La La La. Zuga is her original lion name, but when she defected to the reptile race...
What is he talking about?
That's a guy that's been voted in.
Wow.
So you think there are some odd laws and stuff in rugby. I just think, just for a bit of balance, Jay, that's someone who's got a job in British politics where they make the actual laws of the land.
That has to be a safe seat, doesn't it? That has to be a safe seat.
But no,
my word.
Wow.
Anyway, I thought you'd enjoy that. But just when you're talking about laws of rugby, there's someone making...
I'm trying to reference this back to rugby, but it's so hot. It's so far out there.
Well, maybe if he's right, we could have a 21st. Is there 20 teams in the World Cup?
Yes.
Yeah,
no, 16. Yeah, 20.
So we could have a 21st team. Just getting in through some sort of repechage, maybe.
Yeah, and there's no way that lizard aliens...
A lizard alien 15.
There's no way that lizard aliens would ever officiate a game of rugby the way that, like, a Wayne Barnes does. So they can't be real. And if they are, they're not influencing rugby, because they'd probably make better laws.
They might make better commentators than Brian Moore as well.
Harsh. Oh, hell no, completely right.
There was one thing that, as an Englishman, devastated from the weekend, and we'll get into the games that are coming up this weekend in a second, but as an Englishman, devastated about how England played. I don't mind them losing, I'm so annoyed at how they played.
Yeah.
At least we can console ourselves that there wasn't anyone in England who made a song about the England-Ireland match like this. Are you aware of that Ellie Goulding song that's been number one for about 3 or 4 weeks?
When are you going to know? I realise I know no songs and nothing about pop culture.
All right, well, anyway, just listen to it. Someone's done a song, a parody of that, about this England-Ireland match.
I will kick, we will roar.
That's Johnny Sexton.
From the greats before. Every woman, every man will behold the beauty of my gorgeous tan. As I soar into the sky, so high.
That might be Rob Carney, that.
So high.
Cos they can't play!
Rugby like we do. Rugby, rugby like we do. Rugby like we do. Rugby, rugby like we do.
So, if you're an Irish rugby fan, yes, well done on a victory. Yes, you may well go on and win a Grand Slam. But you and your countrymen made this. Just, they need to be shamed.
I've mentioned this before. The Irish are a strange people. And if you've ever seen their comedy, like The Rubber Bandits or something like that, I don't get it at all.
What Father Ted? Awesome.
Oh, Father Ted's incredible. Father Ted is possibly the best comedy of all
exactly.
time.
Exactly.
I quite like some of the Rubber Bandit stuff
do
as well.
Do you? Yeah. I just don't get
was
it.
You just, are you just backtracking on what you said? You went, Irish are funny people. Oh, yeah, I love Father Ted. Some of my best friends are Irish. You're just doing that.
They are a strange people. But, yeah, Father Ted is hilarious. Some of their other comedy, though, I mean... What is that? Is that serious? I couldn't see the video. Is that?
No, it's well, it's meant to be funny.
It's not funny. But there again, neither are the Rubber Bandits, and they love it. So, you know, maybe it does appeal to them.
Mm.
We get an awful lot of content, don't we, from Ireland?
We do get a lot of content from Ireland. And, yeah, well, so you can have your victory, but you've got to listen to that song on repeat for the rest of the Six Nations.
And also, you've got to come to the Millennium Stadium, so good luck.
So, we've got another week of Premiership action to talk about, and that starts the game on Friday, Bath versus Sale. A week in Bath and a regular strength Sale.
Sale were fairly comfortably beaten and well beaten up front against Leicester, away at Leicester. So this week's not exactly getting any easier.
Leicester have got a try, by the way. Three of them.
Three of them? Who scored?
They've waited for so long. Saramaya Bai.
No. Well, yeah, it was Luke Pearce with a crash over.
No.
Not the referee.
Penalty try.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Luke Pearce?
Keep going.
Lawrence Pearce. Pearce. Yeah, Lawrence Pearce. And then Saramaya Bai.
Just two of them?
Three. Penalty.
Oh. No
Miles.
Oh, damn it.
He hit a lot of rooks.
I bet he did. I bet they're very secure rooks.
So, yeah, you'd expect Bath. I mean, Sam Burgess did not have a good game at 13 this week. He really, really didn't. He looked out of position. He looked like he was... He's trying to offload too much, and it just wasn't working, including a great phase of play from Bath where the 3-4 phases break through into the Exeter 22. Sam Burgess, 5 yards out, tries an offload, and it goes straight to Exeter, and they clear it downfield.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Is anyone finally coming to the conclusion that I was right on Sam Burgess, and what are they doing with this centre experiment, and will they ever move into back row?
Well, I've always, always stuck by my guns.
Second row.
Second row or six.
Six, I think. Six or eight? I mean,
six would be good. Get him playing six.
Tim?
I think it would have been easier to make the transition straight away at six.
Yeah.
Although it is more technical line-out and stuff.
Do you reckon? Then defending at 13?
Yeah, that's hard.
13 is the most difficult position on the pitch to defend at.
Do you know what? I'm with you. I think long-term, 12. I don't see there's anything wrong with that.
But I think they've almost railroaded him into it now. I think if he doesn't work out at 12, everyone's going to call him a failure. And they really should.
I think that is how it's feeling. It's feeling like they're forcing him into that, and it could well end up with him being a failure and going back to Rugby League a lot sooner than everyone expects.
Why was he not considered for Sports Personality of the Year?
Yeah. You're only two months out of date.
It's what, March the 1st today? Well done.
No, but yeah, you're right.
we both completely agree.
Who will win, Bath or Sale?
Bath at home.
Bath with their pack at home.
And hopefully it's good conditions and it's a bit more of an attractive game than weekend.
I think Bath as well.
Yeah. Exeter, London Welsh, move on. Harlequins, London Irish. Interesting one.
London Irish for me, please.
Yeah, London Irish have got a shot. Fresh off the back of a nice walkover against London Welsh.
Mm-hmm.
Harlequins had a tough trip to Northampton, where a very fortuitous bounce in the last second got them a losing bonus point.
Equally, you could say if you were Quins, they fronted up a lot more than they have done. They didn't seem to have quite the same soft underbelly.
They're just not very good.
I think Quins will sneak it at home.
You know, Quins have got too many players that aren't really bad enough to fire. Like, just a load of squad players. And I kind of feel bad for them in a lot of ways because they've all come from the academy and they've done all the right things, but the players aren't good enough.
You think? Would Nick Easter get a run out for him? Would he get released back to them? Or
possibly. It depends maybe. How Lancaster wants to play. Because I actually,
Mike Brown might want Mike Brown to play.
Yes, Nick Easter will get a run out because both Courtney Laws and Jeff Barling returned. Courtney Laws put in a match. Man of the match display.
Who was it? Those two.
So he'll say, Nick, you only had 20 minutes against Ireland. Why don't you just go and play for Quins? Okay, boss, I'll be back next week, will you? Yeah. Of course you will, Nick. Of course you will.
Courtney Laws hammered someone. I can't remember who it was, but he really went through him.
Yard, wasn't it, at one stage?
Yes, it was Yard. And he absolutely smashed Yard.
And I thought Yard had fallen awkwardly on his knee, and I was saying, oh my God, his cruciate's gone, he's out for the season. And then 2 minutes later, he ran in a 50-yard try.
I like Yard. Yeah, Yard's another guy that England should be considering.
Well, only on the strength of that performance, he's been pretty average.
Yeah.
How on earth do you get wide ball from their centres?
No, but even he hasn't had the same zip about him. But he did have it on Friday night, I'll give you that. I think Quins will just... You think Irish, J, Phil?
I think Irish might put in an upset here.
Interesting.
Is your brother playing?
Yeah. Gloucester, Northampton.
Northampton, please.
Northampton, please, Tim.
Saints as well. Sunday, Wasps, Saracens. Interesting, that one.
In Coventry?
Yes.
Wasps.
In Coventry, give me Wasps.
In Coventry, give me Wasps.
Wow.
Newcastle, Leicester.
Newcastle.
In Newcastle?
It is, on their artificial pitch.
On their artificial pitch.
Oh, those Leicester backs will really do nothing. it's a tough one, isn't it?
Alessandro Tuilagi. Do you see Alessandro Tuilagi's try, where he ran over Ben Ransom?
Nope.
60 metres out. I didn't think he had 60 metres in him.
Oh, he certainly does.
He definitely does. Lovely. Great to see.
I would like to see Newcastle win this, but I just think Miles Benjamin and Co will have too much.
I think Leicester will win.
Leicester up front, if they play their normal game and eke the penalties and kick the corners and do all that, they'll probably win. They've got a much stronger pack than Newcastle, particularly as Newcastle don't have Kieran Brooks.
Yesterday, Brad Thorne became the first 40-year-old to play in the Premiership.
Fact.
Wow.
Did I know that?
Happy birthday, Brad.
Happy birthday. That's it for the Premiership. Just run through the matches for you. Cardiff Blues play Connacht and Glasgow play Zebre on Friday night. There's Ospreys Munster, there's Scarlets Leinster and Treviso Edinburgh on Saturday, with Newport Gwent Dragons against Phil's Ulster on Sunday.
Ulster win.
I have something to say about the Pro 12.
Okay.
Mark Hamlet, is it? Mark Hamlet? Hang on, what's the coach's name for the Blues?
I have something that I don't really know to say.
The Blues coach, Hamlet or Hamlet.
Okay, go on.
Has arrived at Blues this summer. Bought over Anscombe, had Adam Jones. In fact, he's got a whole Lions front row. And they have been terrible. Absolutely awful. Anyway, he's on his way out.
Is he?
Yes, and they got this guy from Crusaders.
Hurricanes.
Hurricanes, sorry.
He's been at Crusaders, but Hurricanes was his most recent position.
Now, this just made me think, is this a case of bringing over one of the Southern Hemisphere coaches to coach your region or your club without having any prior knowledge of UK rugby? I'm wondering, will London Irish feel exactly the same way in 18 months' time?
You're just trying to justify your point that you think Tom Coventry is a bad signing for London Irish.
Yeah.
Warren Gatland came to Wasps from where?
Ireland.
Yes. Quite
yes!
He came to Ireland from where?
Oh, yeah. Warren Gatland went to Ireland from where?
I'm guessing straight from Waikato, was it?
Probably. Most likely, I don't know.
Woo! Fine. Whatever. I think we're done, gentlemen.
Thank you very much, Tim.
Thank you very much, JB. Thank you very much, Phil.
Thank you, Tim.
I think we can say, on the England-Ireland game at least, Ireland were the winners, England were the losers, but really, Canterbury were the winners.
Oh, wow.
I have got a jacket on, gentlemen, and I'm going to unzip my jacket before this podcast is done. Look at that.
Very Ooh. Nice.
Is that the Canterbury casual range, Tim?
It is the Canterbury casual range.
I love the casual range.
And just to highlight, this is the sort of stash. Obviously, you can't see it. It's on a podcast, but it's really, really lovely, lovely gear.
Imagine Tim looking as stylish as Phil.
This is exactly the sort of stuff you could win by coming top of our Six Nations Fantasy League table. There's 600-odd teams who are vying to be the best. We've got the league running via the ESPN Six Nations Fantasy League site. So thank you very much if you've got involved. Good luck with your selections over the next fortnight as you debate what you do with round 4 and 5.
A couple of quick mentions. Top scorer in this week, Hel Colclough with Hell's Chance.
What a great name, Hel Colclough.
66 points, which far outscored anyone else. Joint second was Let the Boys Play by Duncan McDonald.
That's a great name.
And you might like this one even better, James. James? JB. Ben Parker's Miles Benjamin Appreciation Society also, nice. Also scored 61 points.
Wow.
Those two know things.
They most certainly do.
And currently top of the league, Michael Clark with Wild Walkers, 204 points.
Michael Clark, you could be getting yourself in your £250 of Canterbury gear. You could get yourself this lovely Canterbury jersey. You could also get yourself that beautiful England shirt that you're modelling there, Phil.
It's nice, isn't it?
Oh, that does look nice.
And those tracksuit bottoms that you're wearing, JB, look gorgeous. At Rugby Podcast on Twitter, get in touch with us there and get the Acast app and listen to us via that for pictures of JB's stag do that I'll be sneaking in on the little visual element that you can put in on that.
That's great.
In the meantime, at Rugby Podcast, we'll catch you next time. JB.
Goodbye, Tim.
Phil.
Cheers, Tim.
In a bit.
She's a lion person, but she's a reptilian lion. And her name is Zuka Lahlahla. Zuka is her original lion name, but when she defected to the reptile race, they added the Lahlahla.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.